Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers. FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers. F up the black police. That 13th Amendment. Trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free. Okay, free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, up coin tail pro. Show, they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we rise up, unity is so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, if you think this shit's gonna be televised. Black power, be scared guys, that be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fuck me promise.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free. Okay, free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for Free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, up coin tail pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, cause that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black women and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit that don't tolerate it, melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack upped up another conversation, Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police departments to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
The term was not given to the public, and the term was not given to the commissioner. Just like the public was not aware. The term, the commissioners were not aware of the tune they left it, played out as the day was by. So to the end, so not very much. So you will not clearly say that we have targeted 10 million. And this 10 million, this is how it is distributed. We have targeted 15, we have targeted 12 million. How is it distributed? The public needed to know. Progressively, the same operational change.
What was your question?
As a commission, we were most
an emergency. We were not doing the tallying. The tallying that was being done by our staff, technical staff, it was not known to the commissioner until the moment that I was contacted. When Mr. Kapi brought the results tabulated in the format. And he did not give us an opportunity to discuss the results. He just said, these are the results of this particular candidate. He has scored this, and they have met the constitutional threshold. And therefore, he is going to meet the results. And he did not allow us to discuss to see whether there were any disparities. So as a commissioner, we did not have other results. Those are the results that we were supposed to have discussed before they are declared in accordance with the legal requirements. So we don't have, and we didn't have, because we were not doing any other reports. It is those ones that was doing, that is simple.
So you believe that there would have been an interest on the whole 34 days that has been uploaded, and once that Kenya has been ready to be able to do that, the final results.
We have given you the statement. And the settlement has indicated 100.5%. The rest is for you to decide. We'll give you the settlement to go and look at it. But even if you look at the screen, before the results were announced by Mr. Chukwukati, they were required to announce continuously that they have been announced. There were about 20 or 30 people, between 20 and 30. We know that because President Rie was carrying the first go and announced those results before Mr. Kukani announced the presidential results.
Okay, so
can
we hear
English?
Can we hear English?
No. We are given
her. We have given you that thing.
Let me answer.
We have sent those ladies to hear this, and I want you to listen, that the final tally of the results was not brought to the attention of the commission, so I will not be able to answer that question. His only name is Ajay Bukati, who can answer that question.
Let me tell you, we have said what was announced, we are not taking ownership because it was not brought to our attention to look at them, analyze them, process them as it is required, even in the legislation. So I will not be able to answer that.
That we are giving to the people of Kenya. It's just
is not determined by the commissioner, then it remains the duty and the law and the responsibility of only one person. And what is the issue that we have in the bedroom where this has the final result? That's what he told us. And then we ask, how about some of the issues that the political party have raised? And he said that I will deal with that. And he never dealt with that. These issues that political parties were raising from the floor of the turning center were important and needed not to have been disregarded. Now these are the issues that we are answering. Where then did those issues go in the context of the final tally of the results that you are going to mention? This is our problem.
Therefore, after his address, there shall be no questions. If sorry. Do you mind scooting?
Kwingineko, viongozi mbalimbali wa kigeni wanaendelea kumpongeza Rais mteule William Ruto kwa ushindi wa urais. Kupitia mtandao wa Twitter, Rais wa Zimbabwe Emmerson Mnangagwa amempongeza Ruto
major setback. As a result, Kenya faces a grave legal and political crisis as a result of the actions of Mr. Wafula Chebukati, the chairperson of the IEBC. The constitution and our laws are clear about how the IEBC should conduct its business. There's no more important role for the IEBC than the conduct, transmission, and tallying of the presidential election.
You are painfully aware of political biases by the IEBC that plunged this country into its darkest chapter. The terrible memories of the aftermath of the 2007 elections are still fresh in our minds. In 2017, the Supreme Court of Kenya nullified the presidential election again because of the misconduct of the IEBC. What we saw yesterday was a travesty and a blatant disregard of the constitution and the laws of Kenya by Mr. Chebukati and a minority of IEBC commissioners. The law is clear on the role of the chairperson of the IEBC. The law does not vest in the chairperson the powers of a dictator to rule the IEBC unilaterally. The IEBC is structured as a democratic institution in which decisions must be taken either by consensus or by a vote of the majority. The chairperson and a tiny minority of commissioners have no legal authority to take weighty decisions and proclaim them as the rulings of the IEBC. The law on the IEBC provides that unless a unanimous decision is reached, a decision on any matter before the commission shall be by a majority of the members present and voting. I want to repeat. Unless a unanimous decision is reached, a decision on any matter before the commission shall be by a majority of the members present and voting. In addition, the Court of Appeal in the Maina Kiai case ruled, and I quote again, reiterate as we conclude that there is no doubt from the architecture of the laws you have considered that the people of Kenya did not intend to vest or concentrate such sweeping and boundless powers in one individual, that is the chairperson of the appellant. That is why I and Azimio La Umoja One Kenya and the nation at large were shocked yesterday to learn that Mr. Chebukati alone decided to pronounce himself on the supposed winner of the 2022 presidential elections. We understand that only Mr. Chebukati alone had access to the tally of the presidential vote. He denied all the commissioners access to that information until he suddenly appeared before the commissioners in the late afternoon to present them with a fait accompli. Barely 2 hours before his announcement, Mr. Bukati called a meeting of the IEBC and revealed to them the different results he was going to announce. 4 of the 7 protested Mr. Chebukati's actions. But Mr. Chebukati, whose mind appeared made up, did not entertain any discussion of the results, precipitating a walkout by a majority of the commissioners, who promptly denounced the results at a press conference. We know what happened next. A majority of the commissioners walked out and held a press conference where they denounced the results. Our view in Azimio is clear. The figures announced by Mr. Chebukati are null and void. I repeat, the figures announced by Mr. Chebukati are null and void and must be quashed by a court of law. In our view, there is neither a legally and validly declared winner nor a president elect. Mr. Chebukati's announcement purporting to announce a winner is a nullity. He acted with gross impunity and in total disregard of the Constitution and our laws. He could have plunged our country into chaos had our supporters not exercised great restraint. Such blunt acts of impunity can be a threat to the security of our country. It is not up to us to decide whether Mr. Chebukati has committed an offense. We leave that determination to the appropriate authorities. But for avoidance of doubt, I want to repeat that we totally and without reservations reject the presidential results announced yesterday by Mr. Chebukati. I want to commend our supporters for remaining calm and keeping the peace, and urge them to continue to do so. Let no one take the law into their own hands. We are pursuing constitutional and lawful channels and processes to invalidate Mr. Chebukati's illegal and unconstitutional pronouncement. We are certain that justice will prevail. I want to further commend the heroism of the 4 commissioners, the majority of the IEBC, who stood up to the bullying and the illegal conduct of Mr. Chebukati. We are proud of them and ask them not to fear anything. Kenyans are with them. Today, I do not want to fully address our strategies going forward, but suffice it to note that we will be pursuing all constitutional and legal options available to us. We will do so because we regard the many flaws in the elections and the wrongs committed by the IEBC as fatal to the process and the outcome announced by Mr. Chebukati. We urge Kenyans and the friends and partners of Kenya abroad to stand tall and be counted as we seek to advance the ideals of democracy and an open society that we have always stood for. We will pursue justice for our supporters and for all Kenyans so that their choices are respected and honored. May God bless you and may God bless Kenya. Nataka kuchukua tena fursa hii kutoa shukrani kwa Kenya wenzangu ambayo wameshiriki katika uchaguzi ambayo imepita. Wameonyesha ujasiri, wameonyesha uzalendo na upendo kwa nchi yao. Wakenya kila mahali walijitokeza wakapiga kura kwa njia ya amani. Na sasa yale ambayo yalibaki ni tume ya uchaguzi kuhakikisha kwamba ile ndoto ya wana Kenya imeheshimiwa. Tumegundua hitilafu ambayo imefanyika katika IEBC ambayo imejaribu kutaka kukiuka yale ambayo Wakenya wenyewe walikuwa wamefanya. Tumeona yale ambayo imefanywa na yule mwenyekiti wa tume ya uchaguzi bwana Wafula Chebukati kwa kujaribu kupindua ili uamuzi wa Kenya. Anafanya hivyo bila kushauriana na wale wenzake ambaye wako pale pamoja naye katika tume ya uchaguzi. Sisi wana Kenya na wana Azimio tunapenda amani. Tunapenda umoja wa Kenya. Tunataka kuona kama Wakenya maungana kama kitu kimoja. Ndio tunaongea juu ya Azimio la umoja. Tuko na nia ya kuona kwamba Kenya imetoka katika janga la ufukara, janga ya kutokuwa na imani, amani, na janga ya ubaguzi ya kikabila, ili Wakenya waungane kama watu moja, waweze kutekeleza wajibu yao kulingana na ndoto ya wanzilishi wa taifa letu. Hatutakubali, nataka kurudia hai, hatutakubali mtu moja ajaribu kuleta vurugu katika taifa letu, kujaribu vile vile kubadilisha yale ambayo Wakenya wameamua kama watu moja. Wakenya hawatakubali, hatutakubali. Tutazidi kutetea nchi yetu na katiba letu kama Wakenya ili Kenya iweze kuendelea mbele. Asanteni sana. Mungu ibariki Kenya nchi yetu.
Niombe sote tusalie tumeketi tunapomruhusu Mheshimiwa Raila Amolo Odinga, mgombea mwenza, Martha Wangari Karua na wengine kuondoka.
Throughout the world today, Africans are engaged in a conversation on what it is that we must do in this continent to make us realize our potential. When you are keen, you will find that Africans who are residents in the United States of America are asking the question, what is it that we must do to make Mother Africa great again? It is not lost on me that only last week here in Ghana, the President of Ghana received African Americans who were engaged in homecoming. They were here to rededicate themselves to the struggle to make Africa great again. And it is not only Africans in America who are asking the question. If you meet Africans in Europe, they are asking, what can we do to make Africa great? If you meet Africans in Asia and in Latin America, they are asking the same question. And Africans in the continent, whether you are talking about Africans in the West of Africa, in South of Africa, in Central Africa, in North Africa, in East Africa, the single question that is being posed and waiting for an answer is, what will we do to make Africa a great continent again? The reason why that question remains alive and well is because history tells us that there was a time when this continent was great. Indeed, those who want to romanticize history will tell you that when the Europeans were in the cold and living in caves in Europe, Africa was great. There were empires alive and thriving in Ghana. There were empires alive and well thriving in Mali. There were organized societies in Zimbabwe and in Eastern Africa. They will tell you that it is our ancestors who built the pyramids in Egypt. One can only romanticize so far. They will also remind you that there was indeed a time when Africa was victimized through slavery, and that Africa went through that space for 400 years. They will also painfully remind you that Africa was the subject of European colonization, and historians will take you to Berlin in 1884 and 85 and remind you that the European powers, in their selfish mode, subdivided this continent arbitrarily into the countries that now constitute the continent of Africa. They will tell you sadly that the European powers, whether they were the Germans, they had a slice of their own of our continent. If they were the French, they had a slice of their own of our continent. Even poor Portugal at that time had a slice of our own of the continent. Even poor Belgium had a slice of our own of our continent. And even the arrogant British had a slice of our own, of our continent. So that when we started struggling to regain our independence, we had been arbitrarily parceled out. And it was not lost on me that even at the beginning of this conference, one of the announcements that was being made is that there were Africans who are referred to as Francophones. In other words, there are those amongst us who, in describing them, we describe them by the language of the colonizer. Africa is the only continent that we still refer to as Francophone, Lusophone, Anglophone, and sometimes even Arabophone. It is not lost on me that even I am speaking in a language that is alien to us. I would have preferred to speak in Kiswahili, but that is the state of our continent. Very soon, we will call ourselves China Funk. So that when I am asked to talk about making Africa work for Africa, what can we do? We can only engage in that conversation in the context of history. What is it, we must ask, that has made Africa so attractive throughout the ages? There was a time when Europe was going through their first industrial revolution, when they were migrating from agriculture, and even before then they needed Africans themselves as a resource. So that in this Cape Coast, there is a monument to the atrocities occasioned by the Caucasians against us. Throughout this coast, you go to Elmina here, not far from here. You go to Liberia, to Sierra Leone, to Senegal, to the Gambia. You will find monuments to the atrocities committed against the Africans. Historians don't say it as loudly as they should, but over one half of the population of Africa was taken out of this continent. If they did not find themselves in the sugar plantations in the Caribbean, they were working in the mines in Europe, or building the underground railways in the United Kingdom, or working in the cotton plantations in the United States of America. Africans built the world as beasts of burden. That is the Africa that we must talk about. And we cannot ignore that history. We don't talk about it as loudly as we should. The Jews were massacred in 1945. Only 6 million of them. But they have made sure that the world is always guilty about those atrocities. King Leopold of the Belgians killed 15 million Congolese, but we never talk about it. So when we talk about Africa and how we can make Africa work for Africa, we must remember the trauma that we must be suffering. Africa has never been left to rest. After they ended slavery, they came up with yet another project, the colonial project. And we struggled against the colonial project. Ethiopia was not colonized. The Italians tried until 1938. They failed. But Ethiopia was only one. Liberia regained her independence in 1847 when some of our brothers and sisters who had been taken to the United States were brought back. But the rest of Africa was subjugated. Portugal took her share in Mozambique, in Angola, in Sao Tome and Principe, in Guinea-Bissau, and in Cape Verde. And I can remember so very distinctly that until 1975, when I was a young high school student, Agostino Neto was fighting to liberate Angola. So was Jonas Malheiro Savimbi in 1975. I can remember so very distinctly as a young student in my lifetime, Samora Machel and Eduardo Mondlane struggling to free Mozambique. I can remember so very distinctly Amilcar Cabral struggling to liberate Guinea-Bissau. So it is not long ago. It is yesterday in historical terms. They were kicked out by force of arms, the Portuguese. Did they leave? No, they did not leave. They engaged in political and economic shift-shifting. So that if you go to Mozambique, you go to Angola, and you go to Guinea-Bissau, the Portuguese influence is still there, in a surreptitious and in a subterranean manner and in a pernicious manner. And if you doubt me, you only have to listen occasionally to their accredited ambassadors in their unguarded moments. They still think that those countries are their fiefdoms to be guided occasionally if they are out of line. But the most pernicious of the colonizers was France. Pernicious to the core. I remember, courtesy of history, when in 1958 the Gaullist administration in France, having surrendered to the reality that Africans had to regain their independence, asking the colonies to vote yes or no. It is only Modibo Keita of Mali and Ahmed Sekou Touré of Guinea, and to a certain extent Ahmed Ben Bella of Algeria, who said, we will be free in poverty. And you remember what they did when they were leaving the French. They destroyed everything, leaving Guinea to die. They had written the obituary of Guinea, they had written the obituary of Mali, they had written the obituary of Algeria, and they ensured that their former colonies entered into a pact which is alive today, that their currency would be printed from France, and that their banks would be controlled from France. In the mind of the French, whether you are talking of Valéry Giscard d'Estaing, whether you are talking of Nicolas Sarkozy, whether you are talking of Macron, in the unguarded moment, they still think that former French colonies are merely their backyard. That is the Africa that you are asking me to talk about, how she can work. And when they were done with us, you know what they created? They created an organization of former French colonies, headquartered appropriately in Paris, France. And if you thought you had seen it all with the French, then they were the gentle and sometimes arrogant British. Why arrogant? The empire over which the sun will never set, they said, but it set. They colonized Nigeria, they colonized Ghana, and people fought against them. He was a great son of this land, Yosajefo, Kwame Nkrumah, who on the eve of independence and on the day of independence reminded Africans on the 6th day of March 1957 that the independence of Ghana meant nothing if the rest of Africa was not free. So we gained independence from the United Kingdom. They gave us constitution. They called them the Westminster Model Constitution. Remember, we are in Africa, but our constitutions, whether in Ghana or in Nigeria or in Uganda or in Malawi or in Zambia or Kenya or Tanzania, are referred to as Westminster Model Constitution. British bureaucrats sitting at the White Hall in London and giving us constitution. Go in, the Africans, and try it out. Africa became a laboratory for the ideas of European bureaucrats. That is the Africa that you are asking me, how does it work? An Africa for which once we had regained our independence, they created us, for us, the Commonwealth of Independent States. And that Commonwealth is a Commonwealth of independent and equal states, they tell us. But the Queen is the head until the second coming of Christ. That Commonwealth which the United States of America, which was a former colony of the United Kingdom, cannot get into and is not a member of because she's too powerful to be superintended by a former colonizer. That is the Africa that we are grappling with. There is also another Africa, an Africa where Belgium, little Belgium, controls the Democratic Republic of Congo, controls Rwanda and Burundi. That is the Africa that we are talking about. Can she be great? Can she be made to work? Oh, the post-colonial African state was designed to fail. This is a question that sometimes we are too afraid to ask. There is also another Africa which, and recently as 1980, when I was a high school student, had not even regained our independence, Zimbabwe, called Rhodesia at that time. And then there is another Africa. Another Africa which in 1994, when I had graduated and was teaching and working, is when the Europeans recognized that they are equals in apartheid South Africa. Otherwise, in 1948, the Europeans in that country, the Boers and the British, took the view that Africans were children of a lesser god, that we were only fit to be hewers of wood and drawers of water. That is how they held until 1994, but as I speak today now, 80% of the land in South Africa is still in the hands of the whites. And they want to be compensated. They took it for free, but they want to be compensated. They have no passports and visas when they came, but they want to be compensated. They are saying the same thing in Zimbabwe. They want to be compensated. They want to be compensated in Namibia. They want to be compensated. That is the Africa that we are gathered here today to talk about. That Africa is a troubled Africa. It is an Africa which, if you permit me, I want to tell you, you paint. And some of these things are homegrown, some of them are engineered from outside, because poverty is a multi-billion dollar industry. You know, sometimes when I listen to Kwame Nkrumah or read some of his works, I say to myself, his other human failings notwithstanding, he had the foresight of a Jewish prophet. Because as early as 1961 in Casablanca, Morocco, he told the leaders of the time that if Africa was to work, Africa had to unite. But fellow Africans and friends of goodwill, even as early as that time, Europe was beginning to divide Africa. They had their own group. They had sponsored Cote d'Ivoire's Félix Houphouët-Boigny to argue against the Osagie for Kwame Nkrumah. But Nkrumah did not stop there. He had other compatriots who thought like he did. Patrice Emery Lumumba did not go to anybody's university, but he was clear that Africa must write her own story. Julius Kambarage Nyerere saw that when Africa met on the 24th and 25th days of May 1963 in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, the message was one and clear that if Africa was to work, Africa had to work as one unit. Kwame reminded the audience, let us unite today. Let us come out of Addis Ababa with one country. Let us come out of Addis Ababa with one army. Let us come out of Addis Ababa with one currency. Let us come out of Addis Ababa with a common foreign policy. Because if we don't, we will each get used to our little sovereignties. Central African Republic will become used to the little sovereignty. Rwanda, Swaziland, Burundi, and all the other countries, and it will become difficult to unite us. But who listened to Kwame on that day? While he wanted the United States of Africa, we ended up with the Organization of African Unity, a loose alliance of heads of states. But you and me know that at that time the neo-colonial projects had started working. I'm saying this because you are asking me to talk about how we can make Africa work. Before we talk about how to make her work, we must understand how she is. This is a diagnostic process. We are trying to understand the malady that afflicts her. Because we must understand the etiology of these maladies in order to prescribe the right medication. So that the neo-colonial project was one that was meant to ensure that we appear to be independent. As somebody once said it in a most eloquent way, Africans were given the crown, but the jewels were retained. So in 1960, those who had started speaking about Africa and how to make Africa great were being eliminated one by one. In Congo, in 1961, barely 9 months after Congo had regained our independence, Patrice Emery Lumumba was dead. In Togo, barely 1 year after independence, Silvanus Olympia was dead. And if they were not dead, they were removed. Here in Ghana, the Osagie for Kwame Nkrumah was removed. In Nigeria, Nnamdi Azikiwe was removed with Kapawa Balewa and the Sultanate of Sokoto, Sir Ahmadu Bello. In Mali, Modibo Keita was gone. And if you go to all the countries, Amadou Ahidjo was gone. David Dako was gone. Coup d'etat. That is the Africa that you are asking me to say, how will it work? It was never at ease. Destabilization after destabilization. That is the Africa. But the beauty of it, that amidst all these Africans, whether they are in the political class, or in the academy, or in different sectors, even when they are engaged in activities that appear to undermine Africa, they have always been conscious of the fact that this continent needs to move in some useful direction. I remember as early as 1980 in Lagos, Nigeria, the Africans came together under the Lagos Plan of Action and they said, we must make Africa work. The Lagos Plan of Action was meant to be an avenue of channeling African resources for Africa's benefit. Did the Lagos Plan of Action work as well as it was intended to? Not as well as it was intended to. So there have been many initiatives designed to make sure that Africa works. Some of them are homegrown, some of them are engineered from outside. Once again, begging the question, why is it always that people are prescribing for Africa what she needs to do? How many of you here will forget the Lomé Convention of 1975, signed in the neighborhood here in Lomé, Togo, African, Caribbean, and Pacific, telling us how we should cooperate with Europe as a way of immunizing ourselves from poverty and improving our lot? Is it in the best interest of Europe that we should do well? I doubt. And when the Lomé Convention had died its death, they came up with another one in 2000 called the Cotonou Convention. This belt, Lomé, Cotonou, appears to be a very favored site for signing these treaties. They signed yet another one in Cotonou to take over from the Lomé Convention. Once again, Africa, Caribbean, and Pacific, is it in their best interest that we should do well? And there is an old English saying, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And for whose benefit is the tune called? And they did not stop there. Everybody somehow is always interested in Africa and her welfare. How many of you here will not remember the structural adjustment programs in the 1980s? How many of you here will not remember the Millennium Development Goals? There were 8 when they came about. Now they have been renamed. Now they are Sustainable Development Goals, and there are 34 of them. How many of you here will...
Excellency Emmerson Mnangagwa, President of the Republic of Zimbabwe. Excellency Age Gengo, President of the Republic of Namibia. Excellency Madam Samia Suluhu Hassan, President of the United Republic of Tanzania. Excellency Filipe Nyusi, President of the Republic of Mozambique. Excellency Wavell Ramkalawan, President of the Republic of Seychelles. Excellency Kitivarjitsin Rupin, President of the Republic of Mauritius. Excellency Mr. Mukweti Mavjoro, Prime Minister of the Kingdom of Lesotho, who will be joining us shortly. Excellency Mr. Sulumbeko Tswane, Vice President of the Republic of Botswana, representing His Excellency Mr. Mokgweetsi Masisi, President of the Republic of Botswana. Excellency Mr. Richard Randria Madato, Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Madagascar, representing His Excellency Andry Rajoelina, President of the Republic of Madagascar. Excellency Mr. Ted Antonio, Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Republic of Angola, representing His Excellency João Lourenço, President of the Republic of Angola. Excellency Mr. Joidu Kamal, Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Union of Comoros, representing His Excellency Azali Assoumani, President of the Union of Comoros. Excellency Mrs. Michelle Ndiaye, Special Representative of the CAU, the Commission of African Union. Mr. Elias Mperi Mahosi, the Executive Secretary of SADC. Honorable President of the National Assembly and of the Senate of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Excellency, the Prime Minister of the DRC. Honorable MPs and Senators, Excellency, ladies and gentlemen, members of Parliament, ladies and gentlemen, representative of international organization and regional organization, Excellency, Mr. the President of the UNITA, distinguished desk, ladies and gentlemen, before I start my speech, I invite you to observe a moment of silence to the memory of the former president of Angola, the late Excellency Eduardo dos Santos, one of the founder, father of our community, who was taken away from us in July this year. Thank you. His Majesty, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, Head of States and Representative of Head of States, ladies and gentlemen, I am honored by your presence here in Kinshasa, answering in numbers to the invitation that was sent to you at the occasion of the 42nd Ordinary Summit of SADC Heads of State and Government. Indeed, the organization of this 42nd summit at this very difficult time is a testimony of our commitment to contribute to the emergency of our community. On behalf of the Congolese people and on my own behalf, I wish you a warm welcome and a pleasant stay in Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. I thank you.
Thank you, Your Excellency. Felix Antoine Tshisekedi Tshilombo, for those welcome remarks. We've now been welcomed. Our next remark will be the introductory remark from the Executive Secretary of SADC. His Excellency Mr. Elias Mahosi. Your Excellency Mr. Mahosi, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Director of Ceremony. Your Excellency, Dr. Lazarus McCarthy Chakwera, President of the Republic of Malawi and the Chairperson of SADC. Your Majesty, King Swati III, the King of the Kingdom of Eswatini. Your Excellency, Felix Antoine Tshisekedi Tshilombo, President of the Democratic Republic of Congo and incoming Chairperson of SADC, Your Excellency Felipe Jacinto Nyusi, President of the Republic of Mozambique and outgoing Chairperson of SADC, Your Excellency Matamela Cyril Ramaphosa, President of the Republic of South Africa and Chairperson of the SADC on Organ SADC Organ on Politics, Defense and Security Cooperation, Your Excellency Dr. Hage Geingob, President of the Republic of Namibia and the incoming Chairperson of the SADC Organ, humbly Your Excellencies, Heads of State and Government and their representatives of other heads of government and state, Honorable Didier Mazenga Mukanzu, Minister of Regional Integration and Francophonie of the Democratic Republic of Congo and the Chairperson of SADC Council of Ministers, all Honorable Ministers from the SADC Member States, Your Excellencies, Heads of Regional and International Organizations, Your Excellencies, Ambassadors, High Commissioners and Members of the Diplomatic Corps, officials from SADC Member States, Secretariat staff, and all invited guests to this session, members of the media, ladies and gentlemen, a very good morning to you all. Good morning. I am greatly humbled to stand before you, Your Excellencies, Your Majesty, to deliver my remarks this morning. May I begin by expressing my gratitude to His Excellency Felix Antoine Tshisekedi Tshilombo, President of the Democratic Republic of Congo, the government of the the government and the people of the Democratic Republic of Congo, for accepting to host this second summit of SADC and to take over the chairship of SADC for 2022-23 year. I wish to express most sincerely our gratitude to the government and the people of the Democratic Republic of Congo for the warm welcome and hospitality extended to us since our arrival in the DRC. Your Excellencies, Your Majesty, it has been a year since my appointment as the Executive Secretary, and this is my first full SADC summit. I have, in my early days and months of my assuming this role, started courtesy calls with Your Excellencies to provide updates on our implementation progress as the Secretariat, my thoughts on the approach to accelerate regional integration, and to seek your guidance and counsel from the community's leadership. I plan, Your Excellencies, to continue with these engagements after this summit to ensure I have covered all member states and have secured their guidance and leadership. SADC remains relevant and continues to forge ahead in regional cooperation and integration. As a united economic community of 16 member states, abundant with natural resources, including water, minerals, wildlife, with a combined GDP of close to $700 billion United States dollars and a combined population of over 340 million people, of which 74.6% are youth. SADC presents immense and limitless opportunities for investment and economic growth that can result in improved livelihoods for our citizens. The region has achieved several milestones since its inception, as attested to by the adoption of several protocols and the number of declarations, agreements, strategic plans and frameworks, including the current Regional Indicative Strategic Development Plan 2020-2030, the Industrialization Strategy and Roadmap, then the SADC Regional Infrastructure Development Master Plan, which have laid a strong legal, institutional and strategic foundation for advancing regional cooperation. I believe, Your Majesty, Your Excellencies, it is now time to maximize the benefits of these instruments and focus on unlocking the bottlenecks which are slowing down regional integration, industrialization, and access to several markets within the region. It is now time to cooperate and have harmonized laws, standardized procedures to foster regional cooperation and integration and socio-economic development. It is now time to work together in true partnership to develop this region. Notable progress has been made in creating a conducive macroeconomic environment, which is critical for ease of doing business and attracting investment by the private sector. However, more effort is required to ensure that our economies converge, especially around incomes, in order to avoid socio-economic challenges that the region is facing. With regards to peace and security, the region remains relatively peaceful. Peace is critical for regional integration, and it is encouraging that the region continues to jealously guard the recorded gains for sustenance of peace and security. Your Excellencies, Your Majesty, gender-based violence continues to adversely impact on socio-economic development of our region. Of the total number of reported GBV cases in the SADC region, 71% affect females and 23% affect males, confirming that violence against women and girls is the most common and still a major challenge in the SADC region. More concerted efforts are required to get rid of this malice. In the area of food security and nutrition, the number of food insecure population in the SADC region has increased by 7.5% in the past year and by 34.9% over the past 5 years. There is need to keep trade open and prioritize intra-SADC trade to ensure that food is quickly and easily moved from surplus countries to those with deficits. With regards to social and human capital development, member states have focused on COVID-19 vaccination rollout as a major preoccupation to combat the pandemic. By the end of March 2022, 10 member states had reached vaccine coverage of over 10%. Seychelles and Mauritius have, however, surpassed the 70% vaccination mark. The remaining member states are still below these thresholds. Both Botswana and South Africa have taken very concrete steps towards vaccine production, and the region should work with and support them to build on this initiative to achieve health security. Your Excellencies, Your Majesty, the region continues to make progress to achieve gender parity with available data indicating mixed performance across the region, with some member states showing constant positive trends while others are losing their gains in facilitating gender parity in decision-making positions. In 2021, a total of 8 member states had more than 30% of women in cabinet. Domesticating and institutionalizing the SADC protocol on gender and development should be a critical step towards gender equality in member states. Your Majesty, Your Excellencies, notwithstanding the progress made in implementing regional strategies, developments in the global, continental, and regional environment pose downward risks to the sustainability of the progress achieved. For instance, while global trade in goods has recovered rapidly, trade in services, including tourism, still remain sluggish. Global economic growth increased by 6.1% in 2021 compared to a contraction of about 3.3% in the prior year, and growth is projected to decelerate to 3.6% in 2022. The new variants of COVID-19 are likely to cause new spikes and surges in the daily number of COVID-19 cases. The recurrence of COVID-19 waves, emergence of new viruses, variants, and the slower than anticipated vaccine rollout pose serious risks to the integration agenda of SADC. There is need for concerted efforts to develop a resilient region by developing, establishing, and operationalizing relevant institutions and instruments that we have already adopted. In particular, the region needs to do the following: promote macroeconomic stability and consolidation in our region. This is needed to win business confidence and ensure predictability in our economies. Address the energy deficit that the region continues to face, with many countries producing below capacity, and diversify our energy sources to power, especially the industrialization agenda. Address the infrastructure gap, and in doing so, enhance productivity and ease the cost of doing business. Develop financial instruments and operationalize the SADC Regional Development Fund to leverage private sector resources to support financing of regional programs and projects in the face of limited financial space in member states. This particular one, Your Excellencies, Your Majesty, I really want to drive it and seek your support to actually operationalize it, because it is the only tool that can help us to attract the necessary resources to actually propel our integration agenda and our development, particularly industrialization. And lastly, give special and urgent attention to gender equality and youth empowerment as a means of leveraging democratic dividend. As I conclude, Your Excellencies, allow me once again to extend our gratitude to the chairperson of SADC, His Excellency Dr. Lazarus McCarthy Chakwera, for his exemplary leadership and guidance during his term, with which the region could not have attained the recorded milestones in our socio-economic integration agenda. Your Excellency, indeed we appreciate your exemplary leadership. Zuko. May I also thank the chairperson of the SADC Organ on Politics, Defense and Security Cooperation, His Excellency President Matamela Cyril Ramaphosa, for the outstanding guidance provided in the implementation of the extremely complex and demanding job of the SADC organ during the year. He and his organ troika colleagues, with the support of the Ministerial Committee of the organ and all the structures below, have literally had little to no rest at all to keep all of us in the region safe. Rale Muhammad. Let me also thank my colleagues, the SADC Deputy Executive Secretaries and all the staff of the Secretariat for the support and hard work that enabled me as the new Executive Secretary not only to learn very fast and discharge my duties, but also the delivery of the Secretariat itself, delivering its mandate during the year. We couldn't have achieved this progress that we have made thus far without this highly committed and professional team. Allow me to also express gratitude to Honorable Didier Mazenga Mukanzu, the Minister of Regional Integration and Francophonie of the Democratic Republic of Congo, for the dedication and support that enabled the successful preparations for this summit and all preceding meetings and associated events. We were able to deliver the summit as committed partners, and I trust Honorable Minister that all subsequent meetings will experience nothing less than the standard we have just set. At this juncture, allow me to welcome the incoming chairperson of SADC, His Excellency Felix Antoine Tshisekedi, President of the Republic of Congo. I wish to assure you, Your Excellency, of the Secretariat's and my personal commitment and professional service during your tenure as you assume the chairship of SADC. With these remarks, I thank you, Your Excellencies, Your Majesty, for your kind attention. Merci beaucoup, muito obrigado, asante sana, zikomo. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Excellency. The Secretary of SADC, Mr. Elias Mahosi. The next statement will be from Her Excellency Dr. Vera Songwe, the Executive Secretary of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa. She is not here present, but she will deliver the remarks virtually. We're going to show a short video clip of her remarks. Thank you.
Your Excellency President Lazarus Chakwera, Chairman of the 42nd Summit of Heads of State and Government, Heads of State and Government, Honorable Ministers, the Executive Secretary of SADC, Excellency Mr. Magosi, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen. It is a pleasure for me to address you today, particularly as you focus on the topic of promoting industrialization through agro-processing, mineral beneficiation, and regional value chains for inclusive and resilient economic growth. It goes without saying that this theme is critical to the entire continent, but particularly to the Southern African region. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, as we know, we're now living through the Russia-Ukraine conflict, which has particularly impact for Southern Africa, because Southern Africa could become the breadbasket of Africa and of the world. Why not, if Southern Africa decided to produce the grains that were needed? Just Ukraine and Russia alone feed 400 million people. Imagine if South Africa, Namibia, Botswana, Zambia were able to produce equivalent amounts of resources. The Southern African region's growth remains subdued because of the crisis. However, this could be an opportunity for the Southern African region, with Mozambique producing gas, which will be able to power our fertilizer sector, with Southern Africa, South Africa, Namibia, Zambia producing the wheat and the corn that we needed. On the financing side, if Africa were to integrate global markets and get into a spirit of friendshoring, as we see in the United States and many other developed countries, we could see how Africa could begin to increase its GDP. In particular, as we look at Africa getting into the climate change play, we see that Southern Africa, DRC, Zambia, could get into the battery precursor business. The Economic Commission for Africa has been working with DRC and Zambia to see how we build this segment of the market. The battery precursor market today is a $271 billion market. the electric vehicles market is a $1 trillion market. This is already 50% of the GDP of Africa. If DRC and Zambia were to come together, working of course with South Africa, Burundi and Gabon to find the other parts that are needed to ensure that rather than send all our minerals out of the continent to be processed and sent back in and in different formats, we could actually begin to produce batteries in Africa and produce electric vehicles in Southern Africa and also get into trade with Morocco and other countries that are already producing vehicles. This is the Africa that benefits from a free trade area agreement where we trade in grains, where we trade in electric vehicles, where we trade in fuel and fertilizer and of course gas, because as we know, if we can get gas, a gas pipeline from Mozambique or Nigeria or Algeria down into Southern Africa will make the use of fertilizer much cheaper. Today we only use 15 kilograms per hectare of fertilizer in Africa, whereas in Russia and Ukraine we use 171 kilograms per hectare. That is why we are importing from Russia and Ukraine. We hope that as we continue these deliberations, the Economic Commission for Africa could continue to support to see how we can also build a blue economy, ensure that with climate change we can benefit from what is today a carbon economy, carbon pricing. A lot of the sequestration of carbon is happening on our continent, is happening anywhere between DRC and the Congo Basin. We also know that a lot of the work that has been done on debt swaps in the Seychelles can be transformed and used in countries like Mauritius to again ensure that we can manage our macroeconomics effectively to create jobs and build better economies. Mr. Chair, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, as I conclude, allow me to commend the leadership of SADC for its engagement with the Economic Commission for Africa, but also with the global regional economic communities and all the work that we've been doing together to ensure that we continue to push forward. SADC is a leader on the common market. SADC is a leader in ensuring that we can begin to really see the benefits of the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement. We hope to continue to work together so that we can learn from what SADC is doing and take it to other regions, but that we can also share our work on strengthening MSMEs, for example, on expanding industrialization in the on the continent, but most importantly, digitization and the work that is being done to ensure that digitization is part and parcel of the Africa we want. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. Those were remarks from the Executive Secretary of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, Dr. Vera Songwe. Your Majesty, Your Excellencies, distinguished delegates, the SADC family has a new head of state who is participating in the ordinary SADC summit for the first time. And at this point, we will invite the new member of the SADC family to deliver his remarks. His Excellency, Mr. Hakainde Hichilema, the President of the Republic of Zambia. You have the floor.
Thank you very much. Moderator, Your Excellency Dr. Chikwera, President of Malawi, Chairperson of SADC, Your Excellency President Felix Tshisekedi Tshilombo, President of DRC, Your Excellency President Cyril Ramaphosa, President of South Africa, and of course, Your Majesty King Mswati, King of Eswatini, Your Excellencies, heads of state and government from different countries that constitute the SADC bloc, the SADC region, and indeed those that represent the heads of states that are not physically present here, Your Excellencies representing the African Union, Fakir Mahamati, Chairperson of the African Union, Your Excellency, the lady who has just spoken, Vera Songwe of UNECA, and indeed Your Excellency Mr. Elias Magosa, Executive Secretary of SADC, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, and colleagues from the media. We really wish to express our gratitude to our dear brother, President Felix Tshisekedi, President of DRC, for hosting this SADC summit and for the wonderful welcome that we have received from the Congolese people. Chairperson, in honoring the memory of President Rupia Banda of Zambia, your former colleague who sat with you in these summits over the years, who passed away on the 11th of March 2022, may his soul rest in peace. We wish to extend our sincere appreciation to your excellencies for the support that you rendered during the funeral and, of course, the if you like, putting to rest of President Banda in Zambia. A number of you came, some of you sent representatives. We're truly grateful for your gesture of support. Thank you for your prayers as well, friendship that you exhibited during this unfortunate situation. Chairperson, we also join others in paying tribute to former President DeSantos for his contribution to our brothers and sisters in Angola, but also in the liberation struggle. Working with his colleagues, such as our own president in Zambia, Dr. Kenneth Kaunda, who together helped to liberate not just their individual countries, but also countries in the region. And I think this is important for us as we advance the SADC way, and because that's the essence of really looking out for each other, as it were. Chairperson, this is my first attendance to such a summit, such a SADC summit, and addressing this summit in this manner is truly my first time, and therefore would like to express our sincere gratitude to all of you, your excellencies, your institution in your countries, SADC as an institution, for your support during our 2021 elections, August 2021 elections, which saw our country Zambia transit, if you like, service, some would like to call it power, to the third president in that manner, who is myself, from, in this case in our country, from one political party to another. I am the third of this kind. So thank you very much for your support. Most appreciated. I want to indicate that this is not a democratic measure of success to Zambia alone, but to all of you in the SADC region, to Africa, and I would like to add you to the global community, because democracies are challenged in today's world for different or various reasons. In this regard, we wish to commend particularly our return to SADC for your support during our elections, I must say before, during and after our elections. We are most grateful for this support. And indeed, without your support, it could have been extremely difficult because the country was going through challenging democratic situation in there at the time. Chairperson, our gathering here today is significant and provides an opportunity to regroup, to re-strategize, looking at our challenges. As you have always done, those of you who have been on this platform longer, as you have always done, and I'm pleased to join you in re-strategizing our country, being part of this continuing process in our quest to better the lives of our people in our individual countries, as well as collectively, as South Africans will call it, as a collective. So thank you very much that we are able to be part of you. As a community, we continue to make significant strides towards attaining our common agenda through the integration of our economies as we aim to tackle the most pressing challenges that we face today. We gather here under the theme Promoting Industrialization through Agro-processing, Mineral Value Beneficiation, and indeed regional value chains for inclusive and resilient economic growth, social included in there, because we grow our economy so we can support our social sectors, as it were, so we can create opportunities for all our people in our countries. Lately, we note that Africa is facing food insecurity like other parts of the world as a result, partially, and only partially, because of some challenges, say, as we have heard already, in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, but also our own continent, on our own continent, the conflict that continues to resolve, conflict which really we don't need in our situation, because every bit of time and resource we have must be driven, must push towards bettering the lives of our people. We must therefore look into ourselves, Chairperson, before anywhere else, to ensure that our people are secure, secure in terms of food, secure in terms of other essentials. This is really our noble duty, and together we are capable of achieving that level of security for our people. We have a unique opportunity to reposition our region as we have had our continent to be part of the production, processing, value addition of food in particular, and indeed other sectors such as electric vehicles, to be able to contribute, to be a net contributor to the global food insecurity. And we have the agronomic conditions, appropriate agronomic conditions in our country. I think all we need to do is to work smart, to work together, and we should be able to achieve that. Chairperson, the transition towards renewable energy, and particularly the electric vehicle revolution, is so vitally important. We have heard the numbers in terms of the value of this market. It's huge. And when we work together, we will be able to achieve more as a bloc, as such. Both production of raw materials, which we are host to, most of us in this region, but also to take in, to bring in the technology that will allow us to convert these raw materials and stop the raw exports that have gone on our continent for centuries, and really bring the added value that we so desire, which will also create not just growth in our individual economies, but more importantly, again, offer opportunities for school-going children to go to school, girl child, boy child, keep them longer in school, and also, obviously, to create jobs and other business opportunities. Chairperson, I wish to emphasize that as a regional body, the SADC Vision 2050, we subscribe to, we continue to subscribe to, as Zambia, and obviously the regional indicative strategic development plan 2022-2030, which stands on the three critical pillars, which you all know better than myself as a new kid on the block. So, and these are industrial development and market integration, infrastructure development, and indeed human resource development, all of which are so, so intertwined and important to our own economies individually and collectively. Chairperson, I wish just to reiterate that investing in human resource through education, health, and indeed nutrition is of paramount importance to our region, like it is for other regions, of course. We can't claim that this aspect is only valuable to us, but to other parts of the world as well, because this is of a universal need, universal application, as it were. Our people, our greatest asset, and it's them that we must make our biggest investments in if we are to move our region forward. And in a small way, Chairperson, Zambia has moved in our first budget as a country, as a member of SADC, we moved to implement free education for all our school-going kids from primary to secondary school, and soon we'll move to tertiary and beyond. For those who cannot afford it, I think it's our obligation to do that. And we have... We have been extremely aggressive on this score, and to support that measure, Chairperson, to provide the resources required to a child like myself, who only came into town to go to university from the village, it is important that we also provide other aspects, which we have done. And this year alone, we have employed over 30,000 teachers, because the classroom space is there, maybe there, but the kid is there. If there's no teacher, what help does that do to a kid? We've also employed well over 11,000 health workers in 2022 alone so far. This is our 8 months in 2022. And in the last 8 months, first budget, we've employed well over 45,000 of the people in education, skills in education and in health. And Chairperson, we believe this is really important and it held our country back. We started very well, but we receded and we would like to catch up with some of your colleagues who have been doing a great job in this area. And I want to indicate here that our efforts to improve the economy really, really is critical to us. But I want to thank our member state here, South Africa, through President Ramaphosa, who acted to help us unlock one of the biggest challenges we inherited, which is a debt mountain. So we agreed, so far we have agreed a debt restructuring program with our creditors, and this program was chaired by China, co-chaired by China and France, but more importantly, deputized by South Africa. So we'd like to openly here thank South Africa and the people of South Africa for helping us in this regard, so that we can unlock the envelope, the revenue envelope, to allow us to invest in other sectors. So thank you, President Ramaphosa, for that. We still need your efforts to consolidate the package of the restructuring along the way. So you are not off the hook yet. In this respect, we also want to touch the value Zambia places on the issue, on the aspect of peace, stability, and security. In our individual countries, in our region, Sadiq, on our continent. And as we have seen with the Russia-Ukraine conflict, anywhere in the world. And it's true to say that instability anywhere is instability everywhere. We cannot underperform in this area, because today's summit is wonderful thrust, focus. If we have no peace, stability, security, everything we do will go down the drain. So I want to urge ourselves, my senior seated there, since I'm the youngest, I'm the one that should run around to collect water for all those people when they need water. Please, let's continue pushing this issue of peace, stability, security, to allow us the opportunity to invest in our economies for social upliftment, to give our people a chance in health for that kid to go to school and after school to get a job or indeed a business opportunity. Really, really important. And I think we must really push this subject. Sometimes we try and push it to the back side. It should take the front seat. Chairperson, as I conclude, we wish to summon our collective memory, the words of Zambia's founding father, Kenneth Kaunda, who I mentioned already, where always, whenever he addressed a meeting like this, even if it was in a foreign land, even a second home like Congo to us, he would still say, Tiende Pamos. Tiende Pamos. Malawi president knows the meaning of that. Mozambican president knows the meaning of that. And I guess others seated over there. Simply meaning, let us move together. Let us move together. In the spirit of KK, who gave us so much for the liberation of our region. A lot of the countries in the SADC bloc got really KK's attention over many years, and to some times to the detriment of the citizens of Zambia. But that was the price that we were all willing to pay, even though we were key, so that everyone can be free. Free to develop their own economies, our global or regional economy. So please, let's continue working together. And Zambia is committed, the change of leadership, one president exiting, this fellow HH coming through, will not alter anything in our quest to work together in meeting the challenges that our individual countries and region is supposed to deal with. In our countries, region, Africa and beyond, we simply look for one key thing or two key things. One side, just our peace of mind, safety, rule of law, everything, our rights. On the other, development opportunities for all our people. Long live SADC, long live Africa. I thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Excellency President Hakainde Hichilema, for that maiden speech to the SADC Summit. Our next on the program will be announcing the winners of the 2022 SADC Secondary School Essay Competition and SADC Media Awards. This is one of the main activities that the Secretariat undertakes to promote awareness of SADC programs and its values. We will be announcing the winners. I'll start with the winners for the essay competition. The topic for the SADC Secondary School 2022 essay competition was, how can SADC boost productive capacity?
You can't say, also, if you, on the other hand, we want to decolonize the continent and come back on the other side and say we want the borders. The borders were imposed by colonizers, and therefore to say you want borders, you are perpetuating the legacy of colonialism, and it has got nothing to do with decolonizing the continent. We need to be one, because one strong currency in Africa is a threat to the dollar and threat to many other strong currencies. One united military in Africa is a threat to a lot of armies in the world, which many of them actually use Africans as mercenaries. So we've got this courage that once we've got one army and we've got our resources together and we've got our land back, the whole world will treat us as equal. The people who say we can't be one, it is those who are threatened by the unity of Africa, and they sponsor the disunity of Africa.
We can't even integrate in terms of regions. Right now, you look at SADC itself. We are struggling to integrate. How can we unite at the continental level while we are struggling to strengthen the regional bodies?
We are led by extremely incapacitated leadership in SADC. There is no one who inspires hope. There is no single individual president that you will say we are looking up to. The people of our continent, especially the region of SADC, are more than willing to integrate. There are a lot of villages at the border of Swaziland, at the border of Mozambique, at the border of Lesotho, at the border of Zimbabwe, which do not have fence. They have become communities. They've become one. How do you have a gate without a fence? We've made mockery of the holes and the fence has collapsed. The people have come together and have embraced each other. We need to provide leadership. We're not doing that. We are drinking the water of Lesotho. We are being told here that the Lesotho people must go back. Let's put them in a bus now. When they arrive in Lesotho, they are going to switch off the tap. You will not have water and you will regret this myopic decision. Limpopo is calling on Zimbabwe to give it water. Most of the domestic workers that we find today in our homes are Lesotho-speaking people, because we cannot work for each other. We've been brainwashed by the whites that the work that I do for whites, I can't do for a fellow black person. People go to an extent of saying, "That's very Mosotun," but Uberega Lokwa, the same responsibilities. The Lesotho people have come in to close that virtue. We have a problem with that. We have a crisis of artisans today. People say they own plumbing companies. It's a South African company registered by South African, but the real person who do the actual work is a Zimbabwean. Are we not going to chase away Zimbabweans today, and tomorrow all these toilets are blocked and there's no one with the capacity to unblock them? We must be aware of what we're asking for, and therefore we require leadership. Our people are more than ready. That's why even when people say to me, "This will take the votes away from you," I've got no problem with it, because it's a principle. Let the votes go away from principle, but let me die with my principle intact. I'm not going to bend political principle for political expediency. I'm not going to do that.
How do you address the issue or genuine concerns of South Africans, unemployment, poverty? How do you respond to that?
Well, we are struggling now, and we can't blame it on Zimbabweans, because we're struggling because of landlessness. We do not own the economy. The owners of the economy who make profit, we're told now, unemployment has increased, but the economy has grown. And that is not translating into fighting poverty and creating employment, because those who benefit from the economic growth are refusing to reinvest that back into the economy of South Africa. Also, let's take the war in Ukraine and Russia. Coal is very expensive now. It's in high demand. We've got coal here in South Africa. You know what is the problem? There is no Transnet to carry the coal to the harbors. And then you want to blame Zimbabweans that don't have a job when your government is so incapacitated. The coal is 400 and something per ton now. It's in demand. If you increase the Transnet capacity, we collect as many as possible coal from all the mines into the harbor, how many jobs can you create? Now, we've got a crisis of steel, not only in South Africa, all over the world. We've got chrome here that gets to be sent to China, unprocessed, and brought back into this country as steel, and it becomes very expensive. Can you see how much this beneficiation of this chrome can create jobs in South Africa? In Skukuni alone, you don't need the big equipment to mine chrome. It's just here, it's available. That's why they say they call those people illegal miners. So there is lack of leadership also in the whole country and the whole continent. To an extent, we do not produce a car. These people who come to South Africa, let's take Nigerians for instance. Nigeria is doing well, better than us. It's always either us or Nigeria number one. They still leave their country and come here. Not because there is an economic crisis per se. There should be something unique about us. These Africans like us. They look up to South Africa. Why is South Africa not producing a South African car? Because there is already the continental market. Quarter a population of Africa is in Nigeria. Why do you fight them instead of embracing them and making them your customers, because they love everything South Africans? All of this is not happening because we've got lack of leadership. There's a crisis of electricity, not only in South Africa, in the whole of SADC region. We've got the biggest electricity company called Eskom. Why are we not capacitating it and start providing the whole SADC with electricity, and the whole SADC starts paying South Africa for the electricity that comes from South Africa and create more jobs for our people? It is because there is no visionary leadership. Not because there are no opportunities. Everything has been killed. State-owned companies have been destroyed. They've destroyed DINEL. They've destroyed SAA. When I spoke much earlier that if they destroy SAA and privatize it, me and you cannot afford to go to Cape Town. People thought I was mad. Now a single ticket to Cape Town is 6,000. Meaning the inland people and the coastal people are going to be existing in different countries because we cannot afford to visit one another. We should have protected these state-owned companies and expanded them to create jobs, but also to stimulate economic activity in our country. All these foreigners who come here, let's identify skills amongst them. Surely they've got something to offer. Let's take the Zimbabweans, for instance. They never had Bantu education. Ian Smith gave them quality education, the same as white people, because there were not enough whites to can carry the economy of Zimbabwe. Are you saying amongst these Zimbabweans there's nothing that we can tap from and use that to grow our economy, the same way the Americans are doing? When you are good and have something to contribute to the economy, they give you a green card. They don't chase you away. So here we just say people are illegal and all migrants must leave our country. We don't have a common vision, and the common vision is leadership. We ought to say as a country, this is what we strive for. and get everybody to buy into that idea and move forward. We cannot continue the way things are, where you have resources concentrated on a certain race, and then the certain race excluded from the resources. We cannot allow this media-sponsored outrage against the foreign nationals. It's a sponsored view. I mean, there are some TV stations where people say there were large numbers supporting these anti-foreigners. But when you look at those people, they can't even fill up a bus because it's sponsored from somewhere where the blacks, apart from being divided between white and black, we must still divide the blacks themselves so that there is no group in society that is united with a common purpose. So the principle I'm driving now, I don't care whether it's popular or not, but people should at least know what you stand for. I don't know what our president stands for. I don't know what our government stands for. And therefore, I refuse to be like them and be turned into an amoeba because there is a sponsored outrage against that which I stand for. No, rather die with my boots on than die on my knees.
As you build the party, what are you focusing on? And looking at the fact that in terms of the party, it has gained traction on the continent.
Well, firstly, our intention is to build a continental movement. That's why the logo of the EFF is Africa. It's not South Africa. We did so deliberately because we know that South Africa will never succeed in an economic liberation without other African countries being economically liberated. We actually failed Zimbabwe. When Zimbabwe took the land, we should have followed and everybody else should have followed. Zimbabwe was not going to be isolated. This movement is necessitated by political vacuum in the continent. We lack inspirational leadership. We lack the leadership with a political will in the continent. All of our leaders today are driven by personal accumulation and desire for power. They just enjoy presiding over their small territories and being called president or prime ministers. They hold no agenda to unite the continent, protect its minerals, and make sure that the continent is put in the world map as an equal partner to Asia, as an equal partner to Europe and America and the rest of the world. So our mission is to make sure that there is one president in Africa, there is one cabinet in Africa, there is one currency in Africa, there is one military in Africa, and there is one reserve bank for the continent. We need an African command team, highly capacitated and highly sophisticated, to deal with any form of killing of civilians in Africa, because we need to put an end to that nonsensical act where when a person holds a different view, it's a target for assault or killing. We need inspired African solution when it comes to peace and economic development of our continent. We need the land of Africa, both under Francophones and Anglophones, owned by the people of Africa, and stopping to see each other through the eyes of our colonizers. That's all what we want as the EFF. We are a younger generation. We are an inspired generation, and we are no longer our parents. And they must stop treating us the same way they treated our parents.
Former Ghanaian President Kwame Nkrumah and the late former Libyan President Muammar Gaddafi also wanted a united Africa. But this didn't happen. It's impossible.
It is not, because we are inspired by them. I think Kwame Nkrumah inspired a lot of African movements and organizations, although their outcomes were not what he would have required. But something came out of his effort. The brother leader was necessarily killed for that, because if you look at Libya, it was one of the most successful countries, despite the fact that there will be questions about the leadership style. We cannot define democracy according to how America and Europe wants us to define it. We must define it according to how it works for us. So the Libyans were organized the way they were organized, and they were prosperous. Look today, the NATO forces, together with America, they've destroyed a potential African country, which should have inspired many other countries. We shouldn't say we can't do anything because those who came before us have failed to do so. I mean, Mandela himself, before him, there were lots of presidents of the ANC who never saw the day of democracy. But inspired by their efforts, he himself continued to fight and ushered us into a democratic dispensation in 1994. We thank him for that, and we thank those who came before him. In the same way, we thank Nkrumah, and we thank Gaddafi, we thank Mugabe, and President Mandela, and O.R. Tambo for having inspired us to continue their legacy. President Mandela knew very well in 1994 when he took over that it's not yet Uhuru. That's why he said to all of us, Aluta continue. If he knew that was the end of the struggle, he would have said, Aluta continue. So we are inspired by his ways that the struggle continues, and we'll continue in that struggle.
To achieve this, by now you should have been in contact or interacting with the leadership on the continent. Are you doing that?
We are.
You are.
Can
you share with us?
We are. I mean, in the SADC itself, I don't think there is a single country without the presence of the EFF. I mean, we also even have members of parliament in Namibia. We are contesting elections in Lesotho. We've got EFF in Swaziland championing and leading the unrest in Swaziland. We are in Nigeria. We are in Ghana. We are in many other countries of the continent. Because it's a new idea, we shouldn't rush it. We should make sure that we dig a solid foundation for this movement to carry the whole continent.